its current state on 90.5 WKAR in 1913. A mighty hurricane-strength storm ripped through the Great Lakes, resulting in the greatest loss of life and ships from a single storm to date. For a century, one particular wreck from that storm, the SS Henry B. Smith, eluded divers and maritime experts. The Smith's life, death, and rediscovery are the subject of a new book by Great Lakes historian Frederick Stonehouse, The Last Laker, Finding a Wreck Lost in the Great Lakes' Deadliest Storm, tells the story of the Henry B. Smith and dozens of other ships and the more than 200 lives lost in November 1913. WKAR's Peter Wharf spoke with Marquette's Frederick Stonehouse by phone yesterday in the first of a two-part conversation. Stonehouse recalls how the tale of ships in the storm is one that begins with the iron ore of Michigan's Upper Peninsula.
The initial mining of it was by the bucket. I mean, I computed at one point that they handled the product eight times between when it came out of the ground and when it finally got to the iron furnaces and later the steel mills, which were just mind-boggling in complexity. But to dig this stuff out, take it by bucket, dump the bucket into the ore boat, take the boat to the all the way through, maybe even portage it around the Sioux if it was prior to 1855, and then finally ending up down in Cleveland, digging it out of the boat again and transporting it finally to either the iron or the steel furnaces. Certainly just an incredibly difficult thing. But this was transition. This was really the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in America with the cheap availability of iron ore, and it was iron ore and later steel that built the country and that changed the entire vessel technology from being wooden hull and sails to being wooden hull and steam engines to being iron hull and steam, and then a transition from iron to steel, all of that occurring within a very, very short period of time. And the book talks to that issue so people understand what's happening, and they have an understanding, too, of the huge number of these iron ore-carrying boats that were on the Great Lakes.
Can you tell me about the difference between the Lakers and ocean carriers? You make that distinction in the book.
Well, it's a very important distinction, and it comes down to the longitudinal strength of the vessel. Because the wave scope on the Great Lakes is discernibly different than that on open ocean. Ocean, you might have a several hundred yard distance between the peaks of waves. So you can have very large waves, but you've got the ability to sail up that wave and then literally sail down the other side. On the Great Lakes, it's really more of a chop where you might only have 50 feet between the wave peaks during a storm. So it's the hammering of the wave against the ship that becomes so dramatically different. But from a maritime engineering perspective, architecturally, it meant that the strength of the ship could be much less because you were supported much better, if that makes sense. So therefore, they were building these things about half of the longitudinal strength that you would find on a comparable ocean-going vessel.
And so how does this come into play in November of 2013?
Well, it comes into play from the standpoint that during a storm, especially if the ships were not properly loaded, you did have an opportunity for these things to crack in two. And that's one of the theories that came around this particular ship I spoke to, or rather wrote about, the Henry B. Smith, and how that had potentially sunk, and understand that there's a number of theories that could apply to it. But one of them was that she simply cracked on the surface in the tremendous wave stress of the storm of 1913. That November 1913 storm, 17 ships were lost in it. 9 of them were considered to be modern steel freighters. And those ships were lost with the entire crew. And some of them remain lost, like the Smith, literally a century of being unable to find this ship. 250 dead sailors also resulting from the storm.
This is Peter Wharf for Current State on WKAR. I'm speaking with Frederick Stonehouse, author of the new book, The Last Laker, Finding a Wreck Lost in the Great Lakes' Deadliest Storm. Fred, the Smith comes from an very busy time of shipbuilding during that transition from the 19th to the 20th century. It seems like there were a huge influx of ships. You mentioned something like 300 ships being built as Great Lake ships between 1905 and 1910, and the Smith was one of those.
Well, And that's what they were doing. The joke in the shipyards was that they were building them by the mile.
Right.
And just cutting them off at whatever length the owner wanted, because they were all virtually identical. And they all entered the trade, again, for the identical purpose of carrying iron ore up, or rather iron ore down and sometimes coal up. But they were largely identical vessels. Some of them sailed until the 1980s. So the design of the vessel was actually very good, again, for what the business they were in.
Give us an idea of the dimensions of the Smith.
Okay, let me set the scene on that. The Smith was about 525 feet in length.
Right.
And that gave her a burden of about 6,500 tons, and she would carry somewhere around 10,000 tons of iron ore at a given time. She would make about 35 trips a year coming down from the Iron Range in Marquette and later the Iron Range up in Minnesota to the mills, usually in Cleveland area along Lake Erie. Carried a crew of about 24 men, and they sailed all of the time. In other words, the ship was constantly in motion. And any ship does not make money sitting at the dock.
Right.
It only makes money when it's carrying cargo. So the pressure was always on to keep the iron boats, keep the long ships moving. And that's what they did in one constant stream. From the time shipping opened in the spring, usually around the end of March, until shipping closed, usually early in December.
You talk about Captain Owen, the captain of the Smith, and you also mentioned the pressure on captains to always keep cargo moving. Does that figure into some of the speculation on why the Smith sailed with bad weather coming in? Of course, you don't have the kinds of forecasts that you do today.
Well, I mean, the weather forecasting was really abysmal. It was a wonderful example of bureaucracy at its finest. Every one of the reporting stations around the country was required to take all of its weather observations, feed it in by telegraph to Washington, D.C., and there the prognosticators would draw the big weather map out and issue the local forecast to the individual station. So the more data that came in, the slower the process was, and the less useful it became when it finally went out to the field. So when the storm struck in the early part of November, people knew there was a storm coming, but because of the lateness of the data forecast going back to the field, they never really understood the power of that storm. And in some cases, for example, it reached a speed or the power of a Cat 2 hurricane on the Great Lakes. But because weather forecasters were restricted, they could only use storm warnings. They could not say hurricane. That was only something that could be used on the Pacific seaboard or the Caribbean. Then the vessel owners and the vessel masters really didn't have a clear idea of the hell that was coming down on them.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why so many of the ships were lost, particularly on Lake Huron when 7 of the 9 big carriers went down with all hands. But what had happened to Smith, we can believe, again, no, there were no survivors, is that he was in Marquette waiting to sail and had just finished loading. Obviously, he needs to get the cargo through. This is what they pay him to do, but they also pay him not to break the boat. In other words, to do so in a safe manner. Though he may be going through rough seas, he still was expected to exercise his judgment as a master mariner. But a lull in the storm came through, and that lull was utterly on forecast. Nobody was aware that it was coming. It looked like the back of the storm had broken. And at this point, it's okay for him to go because he'll be going into increasingly improving sea and wave conditions. And that's what he did. And he got up 4 or 5 miles outside of the city, downbound for the Sioux Locks, and then everything just literally went to hell in a handbasket. And at that point, he could not return to the city, so all he could do was make a big left-hand turn to try and come in under the shelter of the Keweenaw Peninsula, about 70 miles or so to the northwest. And, of course, he would sink. He would be lost some 25 or so miles short of that goal. It is believed, at least from what the forecasters have been able to work through now, that he was probably in wave conditions exceeding 35 feet and winds exceeding 80 miles an hour. And
right.
That certainly just would have overwhelmed his ship or any of the ships that were on the lakes that night. As a twist to the story, There was an energetic, from what I can determine, there was an energetic reporter in Marquette working for the second city newspaper. The big paper was the Mining Journal, and that represented, if you will, good, solid reporting. And then there was another one called the Marquette Chronicle that was kind of the edgy little paper trying to be a big paper and by trying to scoop and come up with all these crazy ideas. And one of them they came up with was that Smith was told by the vessel owners, if you don't get it through on time, if you don't make this last trip, then we're going to fire you. And I can find absolutely no collaboration or collaboration anywhere, or corroboration, rather, that actually spoke to that in any of the official documents anywhere. In fact, the shipping company, when they had word of it, the owners of the Smith, the Acme Transportation, literally filed charges to take the paper in the court for defamation of character.
Frederick Stonehouse, author of The Last Laker, Finding a Wreck Lost in the Great Lakes Deadliest Storm. Frederick, thanks so much.
Thank you.
For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.